I'm Mark Simpson, and this is a special episode of Intersection. This week, we start an occasional series of conversations with the people who keep the space shuttle flying. On this episode, we'll talk with René Ariens. He's a member of the Orbiter Closeout Crew. That's the folks who shut the space shuttle's hatch when it gets ready to blast off. It's part of 90.7's look at the shuttle program as the countdown moves closer to the final mission of the shuttle, scheduled for July. The folks out at the Kennedy Space Center are busy right now because Space Shuttle Endeavour is slated to return this week and Shuttle Atlantis is headed out to the pad. Up next, a special edition of Intersection taped at the Kennedy Space Center. René Ariens is among the last people to see NASA astronauts before they lift off into space. He's on the closeout crew, one of seven people who help strap the astronauts into the shuttle cabin and close the hatch. The team also takes care of any last-minute needs, and Ariens has worked at the Kennedy Space Center for more than 20 years. You're listening to a special episode of Intersection taped at the Kennedy Space Center. René, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
It's great to have you here. So you work currently on the closeout crew. What does that mean? What do you do as a member of that team?
Well, the closeout crew is basically the last people that come out and perform operations to prepare the vehicle for launch. And that includes all the wearables that the crew wears and making sure that the cabin is configured with the cue cards. And all the stowage is complete, and that also means mechanically and electrically configuring the vehicle for launch.
What do you mean cue cards?
Well, they have cards that help them remember during certain phases of the launch that they have to perform certain actions. And because the launch can deviate from the normal flight path, that they would have actions that they would take.
So it's basically instructions for the astronauts.
Yes.
Talk to me a little bit about being a member of the closeout crew. Do you have to get special training to be on the team that handles those items?
Absolutely. The first training you get is familiarization with the crew module itself. And you need to know your way around inside there, because the second part of your training is fire rescue training. And if the conditions change where you might have to execute some of those skills, you need to know your way around in there, obviously, and so you wouldn't become part of the problem.
So you're pretty familiar with the cockpit, where the crew is and that sort of thing.
I can find my way in there where the light's out.
Wow. How long did it take to figure all that out?
It takes about a good year or so of being familiar with it inside the crew module. I spend a lot of time in there with my other jobs, which is forge shop technician and a spacecraft operator.
So what do those jobs entail?
Well, the forge shop technician, basically before we get to the launch day, is anything from the crew module bulkhead forward to the heat shield, we take care of all the mechanical, electrical needs up to the launch countdown. And then the spacecraft operator we're part of the test team, actually. So we're in the crew module, and we conduct tests with the test team in the LCC, and we actually operate the vehicle.
What's the LCC, you said?
Launch Control Center.
Okay.
That's where Mike Leinbach and the rest of the NASA test directors are, and that's where they conduct the launches from.
So it sounds like you really do have an intimate view of the shuttle, both inside and out.
Oh, yes. We get hands-on on all parts of the vehicle. And when I'm not really, when we're not busy in one area, we'll get shifted to another, like maybe the aft compartment. For this last, in the VAB, in the vertical assembly building, when the orbiter rolls over, I start by lifting the orbiter to the external tank, and there are certain processes when you mate the tank to the orbiter that I'm involved in the aft compartment.
Like what?
Well, like hooking up the power bolts and attaching the external tank to the orbiter electrically. They have a configuration called a monoball, and it's basically like an eyeball connector, and you have two of those, and that's what allows the orbiter to talk to the tank and the SRBs.
And you said pyro bolts, right?
Yeah, pyrotechnic bolts, yes. That's what separates, that's what holds the major structural components of the orbiter together. And then at the correct time, they are expended, and the big major sections come apart.
So it sounds like you, as the shuttle is prepared for launch, you change out your hats as you go through that process.
Yes, yes. And it's very interesting. I would have never expected to have this job when I started here. It's just a wonderful opportunity, and what a ride. I got to tell you, what a ride.
What'd you start as?
I started out here modifying Pad B as an electrician, instrumentation electrician, for shuttles from Apollo. And so we ripped out a lot of the Apollo equipment and updated it. And that was just at the turn of when computers were really entering into industry. And so we updated a lot of that stuff up to digital. And that was very interesting in the early days, let me try to tell you.
What was challenging about it?
Well, writing code. As a technician, you sometimes ended up helping the engineers write code that would match what was in your configuration for your for what was, you know, the logic per se.
Of all those hats that you wear, do you have a favorite one, a favorite part of the job working on the shuttle?
I'd say maybe the best one is as a spacecraft operator, meeting the astronauts on the runway. When we open the hatch and commander gets out, and you know, you might have or might not have strapped them in, and you get in the vehicle and they close the hatch on you, and the vehicle's in your control with the test team, of course. And it's, you have a $5 billion orbiter at your command, basically. And that's a pretty big rush.
Are you thinking that when you're doing the job itself?
Oh, no. You can't let that creep in. You can't ever let that creep in. Afterwards, it's okay, but you can't ever let that creep in. You have to be intensely focused on what you're doing.
How do you keep focused on what you're doing? Is there ever a moment you find your mind wandering, you say, hey, I've got to get back on task here?
No, it's training, and understanding the systems, and you have to be ready for anything. It's a pretty fluid, it's so complex that one small thing can change the path of your process. So you have to be ready. And so you're in there basically maybe 5 or 6 hours with the hatch closed, and then they open the hatch up and they get another team in there to come in there, and they roll it into the OPF. And that's on a normal day.
Explain that part to me. When you say you're in there with the hatch closed, is that with the shuttle actually on the pad, or that's...
That's on the runway. When the orbiter lands, the crew is in there, and they have to safe the vehicle. It's being cooled by several different methods. One of them's internal. We have to get the orbiter off the internal cooling and onto the external cooling, because the internal cooling is only limited to a limited amount of time. So while they're doing that and they're safing the hydraulics and checking to make sure they don't have any leaks or flat tires or anything else like that, we will be prepping to roll the white room truck to the hatch, and once we get the go, we'll open the hatch, and the flight doc will go in there and check them all out, make sure they're all in good health and they can make it out on their own. And we'll get back up, we'll exchange with the crew as they come out. And once the ASP, astronaut support personnel, is done with the Houston part, then my job begins.
And so you actually come in and you're in that shuttle for several hours or so getting things prepped.
Yes, and they will destow active experiments at that point, or any perishables, and load them onto a truck. And then at the time that we get ready to tow, we'll do a big switch list and configure the whole vehicle. And they'll close the hatch. And we'll tow into the OPF or to the MDD, the D-Mate device, if you're at in California.
Are you actually riding in the shuttle as it's being towed?
Oh, yes. And it's like I said, it's a big rush looking out the window. And
so you really are kind of in control of the shuttle then? I mean, you're not going to take off.
But. No. My max speed is 3 miles an hour.
That's pretty cool.
And it's completely powered up. It's on its own power. And some of the experiments I can't destow, which are in the payload bay. And you have to watch the cooling. And that was one of the major things in the fuel cells or the other as our power source.
We're talking with Rene Arians. He's one of the last people to see NASA astronauts before they lift off as part of the closeout crew. But as you're hearing, he does wear a number of other hats in the shuttle process. Rene, you were talking a little bit about getting to know some of the astronauts. You work closely with them. What's that relationship like? You know, do you know them pretty well?
I know I have in my career known some of them extremely well. And it can be a good and a bad thing. In the fact that one of my favorite friends was on Columbia. And so it can be, but as a kindred spirit, because I have a sense of adventure, that's why I connect with them, I think, is that I know that that's where they wanted to be. And they wouldn't have traded their places for anything.
When something like that happens, when an accident happens and people's lives are lost, how does that impact the mood both at USA and at NASA and the job that you have to do? How do you move forward from that?
Well, there are no good accidents. We work through that. It's been tough. And, you know, honestly, we've had a very good safety record since there, and we make improvements and move on.
What are some of the good stories that you've had, good experiences you've had with astronauts?
Oh, let's see. We sing to them on launch day.
You sing to them?
Yeah, sometimes.
What do you sing?
It was a rainy day, and we weren't wondering if we were going to launch or not. And so they came in the white room, and we sang Blue Skies not very well.
I wonder about that. You know, we always hear about NASA kind of having these superstitions maybe before a launch or even after a launch, or like a big sports team does before a game. Are there superstitions out there, or is that just a big rumor?
Just maybe the closeout crew. We have a small superstition. We have a hood ornament that one of our friends gave us, an astronaut friend. She gave us this hood ornament, and we give it a little rub every time we go out to the pad.
Is it a specific one for the shuttle, or is it just one?
No, it's just a hood ornament she gave us for the closeout truck, and we didn't want to put it on the hood because we were scared it might disappear, so we put it inside, and we just keep it there as a good luck charm.
And who touches it?
We just pat it.
Including the astronauts?
Well, no, just the closeout crew.
Now, talk to me about what's happening as you're getting ready to close that hatch and put the astronauts in there. You know, what's the conversation that goes on back and forth? Are there personal moments there, or is it pretty much business?
It can be personal, and a lot of times, like when we're doing a practice countdown, it's pretty jovial. I mean, we're all happy, and it's easy going. But on launch day, there it can be kind of tense depending on how late or early they got they came out to the pad. There might be schedule pressure involved in that, because some of our launches do have actually very precise launch times that they have to be where they have to be. So we're on a pretty tight timeline most of the time. And you try to talk to them on a personal level, but not take their mind off what they're going to do.
What would you say is the funniest thing that's ever happened between you and an astronaut?
Well, when you're zipping up their harness right here, sometimes if you have to tell them to look to the side, because if for some reason your hand slips, you're going to knock their glasses off or hit them in the face. So I knocked one of them's glasses off and broke them.
You broke them?
Yeah. But they're very flimsy glasses because they go underneath their little comm cap. But they had a spare pair.
I was going to say, is that a showstopper?
No. They have spare pairs.
I'm thinking for someone like me, whose eyes are very bad, that could be a problem.
I was very embarrassed. But it does happen.
Did it never happen again?
No.
Not from you anyway.
No. I always tell them to look to the side.
We're talking with Rene Arians. He's a member of the closeout crew working for United Space Alliance. He's one of the folks who helps to get the shuttle and the astronauts ready for liftoff, and then he helps process the shuttle when it comes back to the Earth after completing its mission. You're listening to a special episode of Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. We're taping at the Kennedy Space Center. Talk to me about the launch pad environment. You know, what is it like when you go out to that launch pad and, you know, you have to ride up to the top of it? What is that experience like? Is it impressive? Is it frightening? Is it just you're focused on the task or you're not really thinking about it? What goes through your mind when you're out at that tremendous launch pad?
Well, the view is stupendous. And depending on what time of day you go out, it could be at sunrise. It could be right at night with a full moon, a really big full moon, as we've had one. I think it was STS-25. They had the great big full moon behind it as a harvest moon. It was awesome. And when you roll up to the pad and the RSS, the rotating service structure, is rotated back and the whole orbiter is there, illuminated by this white light, and it's just you have all the liquid nitrogen that they're purging through the engines is smoldering down below the pad, and you get out and you hear a lot of gas moving around. I can't think of something that your listeners could. It's a lot of gas moving around. You can hear it in pipes and. And you get out and you look up and you say, well, I was just here and it didn't look like that, you know, 8 hours ago. And it's, you crawl in and you go up the elevator. We have a lot of items that we have to put in the elevator and we move them up and get everything situated. And you look in, you look out, and you look through the windows. And if it's like a sunrise, you can see the ocean. You can see birds flying by and it's just awesome. It's kind of intense, but it's kind of calming at the same time because there's not a whole lot of noise once you get in the white room.
How long does it take to get to the top of the pad?
Once we leave the roadblock, it takes about 10 minutes to ride up there, and about another 4 or 5 minutes to load the elevator, and then up you go, and you're on the 195-foot level.
What do you hear when you're out there at the pad? You mentioned hearing that gas. What are the noises of a shuttle out there at the pad?
Well, there's sometimes there'll be some venting, some high pressure venting.
What does it sound like?
It's like a jet engine, very close, and sometimes they'll vent lines. You can sometimes hear the flare stack, which vents off all the excess hydrogen that's being boiled off, and they take it out to a stack about 150 yards away, and they burn it off. And you can hear that sometimes coming out of the stack and burning off. And the pipe that feeds it is right there on the 195-foot level, and it's all encrusted with ice. And so we make space snowballs out of the ice, and sometimes so here you go.
Well, it's fascinating to me. You talk about this launch pad, and you know, you're out there, you're exposed to the elements, you've got these tremendous sounds out there, you've got fire, you've got ice. I mean, it's very primordial, it sounds like. I mean, it's got to frame your mind in a certain way.
In my first couple of years on the closeout crew, it was very intimidating. It was extremely intimidating, but after you get about 10 under your belt, you get a little more at ease, but you're always looking around because for the smallest things out of place, because those are the things that you want to fix right then and there. And we're kitted up to actually contend with a lot of different scenarios when we go out there. And if any one of them comes up, for instance, the last launch, we had a little piece of tile come off. And we had to be ready for that. And we were ready. We had all our gear ready and got the camera out and plugged it back in, let the engineers have a look at it, and then repaired it, and on we go.
Are you stressed when you're out there?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Is that because we're near the end? Or
no, I'm pretty at ease. I've got about 40 launches under my belt, and there's sometimes it can be stressed when the hardware doesn't behave. You could come across a problem that you really want to fix, but you just can't. And sometimes it'll scrub.
Is it a letdown when it scrubs?
Oh, yeah. It's a big letdown. Yeah. And it's even more of a letdown when you have to go let the crew out, because they're more let down than you are, because they really wanted to go. So it's and I can feel that when they come out.
You started working with United Space Alliance in 1987, and at that time NASA was preparing to return to flight after the Challenger accident the year before. When you joined the team, were there changes being made to the way the closeout crew works with the shuttle in response to Challenger?
Yes. There's a many extra safety devices being put into the orbiter, and so we had to learn those systems as a spacecraft operator and a closeout crew. And for the closeout crew, our training changed. We're basically mandated to do fire rescue training from the Apollo era. And so our training got more fidelity in it so that we would be able to contend with more changes if we saw them. And that's what we were... We trained up for that, and that took a lot of our time.
Did that relationship between you and the astronauts change at all after the Challenger?
Well, since I was just beginning then, no, I would say not. Maybe after Columbia it might have changed.
In what way?
Well, I had a personal relationship with some of those, and it is pretty. It's good, though. You know, I still have very close relationships with all of them that are there now.
Do you have a favorite shuttle?
Yeah, actually. It's Atlantis, just because she's the cleanest one out there.
Cleanest one?
Yeah. And for processing for us, just gives us the least amount of problems.
So you're talking in that way, not necessarily the physical skin of the
right.
vehicle itself.
Yes, correct.
Because I was thinking, you know, Endeavor's the newest, so wouldn't that be the cleanest?
Yeah.
Which one gives you the most trouble?
Well, actually, I think Columbia, we changed three sets of engines out one time, and that took us a long time. It was on the pad for a long, long time, and that took us a long time.
Well, what's going to happen to you after the shuttle program ends? We're waiting for the final launch of Spatial Atlantis here. What happens to you after that liftoff?
Well, I will probably be staying on here for a little while, and we're going to help transition the orbiters to their new homes. And there are some other things that are coming up, and hopefully we'll be a part of those, like maybe the Orion capsule, which is our next manned space capsule, I think, that's in design stage right now. And we have input. We've given them the input about how the closeout crew would operate and some of the things that they would have to pay attention to in their design. So we've given our input and passed along some of our torch knowledge, as it were.
Is it sad to see the shuttle retiring?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it surely is.
Why?
It's has such great potential, and it comes with a pricey tag, but it has got some really great potential, and I don't think that we'll see any other machine like that in the near future.
Are you going to go see the shuttle when it gets when Atlantis comes over to the visitor center?
Well, sure.
Are you going to feel, you know, like, hey, what did they do to my shuttle? It's hanging from the ceiling, or but you know, are you able to pull away from it? Or
oh yeah, I think I could pull away from it. These machines are basically the product of people's imagination, with the love of engineering, and everybody that works on it loves the teamwork, the perfection of doing something exactly right and getting it to work. And because it's an incredibly complex machine. There, every now and then, it used to be all the time, but every now and then, you learn something new about it, and it's really amazing. It's an amazing machine. It has a lot of capability.
Well, we're just about at the end of the shuttle program. What's something that you've learned that you didn't expect, something new?
Well, for instance, in the earlier days, the Air Force had such a big impact on the design of the shuttle that the way it is because of the Air Force. It's as big as it is because of the Air Force. They were going to launch their payloads in it. And the shuttle would have never been as big as it is if it hadn't have been for the Air Force. So there's a little tidbit.
A little tidbit there.
Yeah. We were basically hooked, linked together with the Air Force in the beginning. We were going to launch DOD payloads as well.
What's something that we think that the general public doesn't know about the space shuttle that you've learned over your years of experience that they would be surprised about?
It's a lot smaller inside than they think. It's much smaller inside. I would say the mid-deck is probably 17 feet wide by 6.5 or 7 feet tall, and that's it. And the flight deck is just tall enough to stand in and barely move around. It's like the cockpit of a 747 or something like that.
So when people think spaceship, it's not like on TV.
But that's it. No, it's not. It really isn't.
I'm fascinated by the fact that you get to close the hatch, you know, on the astronauts before they go off into space. And I wonder, are there ever any special final words you exchange with astronauts when you close that hatch?
See you in 2 weeks. That's our favorite one. Sometimes I remember two flights, they were all singing to themselves in there. And that was pretty funny. They were doing rock and roll tunes. Some of the most interesting parts of what I do when we're processing is stowing the spacesuits and or the payloads in the payload bay in the vertical. We have flown a space lab or a space hab, which is a habitable module that goes in the payload bay. Now, when those are installed in the horizontal, they don't install the payloads yet, and they wait until it's in the vertical. So how do you get down 60 feet in a hatch that's only 44 inches across? You get a big electric winch, and you put on a hang glider harness, and you have three hooks, and you go up and down, up and down, up and down. And I've spent a lot of hours doing that, and that's pretty interesting because I wouldn't say it's like a spacewalk because I've never been in a spacewalk environment, but you really have to account for all your tools and do not drop anything. And everything has to be tethered. You have to be very, very careful because if you drop it, you may not find it again. So, and then you have to take a lot of paperwork, and it's very bad. Fortunately, I've never dropped anything. I mean, you are in the elements. It could be wet out. There could be mosquitoes. They've had a lot of mosquitoes out there in the past. I remember a couple of times that we had to go in the elevator with Raid and just drop them because they were so thick in there.
That's one thing you don't think about when you think about NASA launching a space shuttle. Well, Rene Ariens is on the closeout crew for United Space Alliance with the space shuttle program. Rene, thank you for coming by and sharing some of your stories with us.
I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it too, and I hope your listeners enjoyed it.
You can hear Rene Ariens talk about his encounter with a massive gator out at the launch pad. It's a web extra online at WMFE.org/intersection. There you'll also find previous episode and links to our weekly podcast and the Florida Talks blog. Share your memories of the shuttle with us at the WMFE Facebook and Twitter pages. In the coming weeks, we'll bring you more conversations about the shuttle program on 90.7 and Intersection. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.